Well, in the name of food safety, our representatives in Washington, D.C. passed the Food Safety Modernization Act, which grants the federal government total control over what we may feed each other. But instead of feeling all snugly and safe in the bosom of the feds, the tiny town of Sedgwick, Maine, passed a local food and self-governance ordinance, which says, in effect, that Sedgwick will maintain control over its own food. This local food rebellion leads us to ask, who should control what we eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 723rd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Hong Kong who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, we've had a bad stretch of luck going back a few years over along our industrial food chain with contaminations of baby food, eggs, hamburger, peanuts, pet food, spinach, who knows what else. And those things have been making people sick all across the land. So to address the problem, our representatives in Washington, D.C. passed a Food Safety Modernization Act, which grants the federal government total control over what we may feed each other. To make certain that what we feed each other is safe, the feds are constructing food safety rules and regulations that will likely be so onerous that only giant companies will be able to afford to comply with them and to defend themselves against prosecution as well. Thus, small companies will become easy prey for the ambitious government regulators who will be out to make a name for themselves. Sensing themselves in the crosshairs of a new prohibition, residents of the tiny town of Sedgwick, Maine, who have been known to trade a jug of fresh whole milk from their cow for a brace of the neighbor's chickens, proposed a local food and community self-governance ordinance that would, in effect, grant the community's residents sovereignty over their own food. The proposed ordinance was put before a Sedgwick town meeting, a Friday evening institution practiced since 1794, in which all residents of Sedgwick are free to vote on every issue placed before the community. That's like true democracy, right? When the local vote ordinance, when the local food ordinance came up for a vote, 120 residents of Sedgwick held up their right hand and said yay. None voted nay. This local food rebellion by Sedgwick, Maine, against the United States of America leads us to ask, first, why did Sedgwick, Maine, vote for the local food and self-governance ordinance? What was wrong with the government safe food? What impact will Sedgwick's local food and self-governance ordinance have on the nation's body politic? Will anybody pay attention? And finally, and most interestingly of all, is who should control what you and I eat? Well, those are the questions on the table today, and here to help us chew them over, we have Bob St. Peter from Sedgwick, Maine, and proprietor of Saving Seeds Farm. Bob, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure to have you aboard. Now, Saving Seeds Farm, that doesn't sound like something that's being operated by the Monsanto Corporation.
No, I started seed saving in part because of my frustration with doing GMO policy work and needing an outlet for that frustration and frankly, the anger for companies like Monsanto, who seem so inclined to control resources for profit and not for people.
So you actually started saving seeds? Started a farm that saves seeds?
Yes, I have.
Good.
We're in the second year. It's a one-acre seed farm, and it'll be open to the community for education, and hopefully we'll bring in a lot of young people and get them excited about seed saving and small-scale farming.
So you sound like a rabble-rouser, saving seeds and things like that?
Well, we actually, I work for an organization called Food for Maine's Future. Uh-huh. We put out a publication called Saving Seeds, and we chronicle the the local food movement, the food sovereignty movement here in Maine, but also around the country and internationally.
And you're also on the board of the National Family Farm Coalition down in D.C.?
That's correct. And I also serve on the board of Family Farm Defenders.
Okay, so you are a rabble rouser. Glad to have you aboard. We like to talk to rabble rousers. Okay. Goodness sakes. Nothing to be ashamed about raising some heck once in a while, especially when it comes to our food, right?
So I think it's of importance for sure.
So first of all, I'd like to, you know, for you to tell the audience a little bit about Sedgwick, Maine. I took a flight to Sedgwick here, kitty corner across the country via the auspices of Google Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I landed right in the middle of nowhere. There was no Sedgwick in Sedgwick, Maine. What happened to Sedgwick, Maine on Google Earth? It's gone.
I couldn't tell you. I've never looked.
You're still there then, right?
We're still here, yeah. I'm just down the road from the town hall, and my neighbors still seem to be here. So
good. Okay.
Yep.
But
we're a small coastal community, fishing community, farming community, very seasonal community. A lot of people come here in the summer, come here to vacation. But the year-round population, mostly working people who try to make a go of it, in any way we can around here.
Kind of sounds
like a lot of rural America.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like our neck of the woods, kitty corner across the country here in California, but on the coast. But, we're probably a little bit more crowded than you, but we seem to be a lot of working people trying to figure out how to make a living in the world, so kind of the same. And probably a lot of America with respect to not being in the inner city and whatnot, but being kind of semi-rural and whatnot. So how do you folks get by when the tourists aren't in town?
Well, state and federal aid programs, for certain, unemployment, food stamps, the work that continues through the winter, and trades work, the building craze that really swept the country also swept through here a few years ago, and so a lot of people were doing a lot of work in the construction, carpentry trades, plumbing, whatever, that's mm-hmm. not so much available now. I don't know really. I know that I have a lot of friends who are unemployed or underemployed who are doing what they can. Fortunately, a lot of us grow at least some of our food.
Mm-hmm.
And firewood if need be.
And that kind of gets us to the nature of rural living or semi-rural living, is that when we live in places that are kind of off the beaten path a little bit, we do tend to have a lot of irons in the fire, because it takes a lot of irons in the fire to keep things going, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. If you have work for each season, you're doing pretty well.
Do you do any trade? Do you, like, barter things with each other? Like
all the time. I have I'm part of an extended community of homesteaders and small farmers and people, and we're productive people, and we oftentimes will barter and trade. Winter was pretty tight this year, and I ended up paying for some things with potatoes. My wife and I trade for various things. She makes some products, I make some products, and we trade them around. When cash is short.
So you actually use potatoes instead of cash?
Yeah, I did on a couple occasions.
Which is probably something that happens quite more than one would suspect in off the beaten path in places where like that.
I would say so, yeah.
Tell us about, your idea of the importance of local money when it comes to, like, Sedgwick, Maine.
Well, I think the local money is a good idea, but if there isn't anything tangible to back that local money, like food or like, timber products or local industry, then it's not worth a whole lot. If you can't get things locally that are of value, if we're not producing things of value, then what good is our money?
And how can you keep it there?
How can you keep it there? Because if we create it, it's going to have to be. I thought of the idea of local currencies because I know other places have, but the trick is to get you need to change your U.S. dollars for some kind of currency or change something for that local currency, and if it's not backed by something tangible, then out it goes.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when we think of the rural parts of our country, we all often think of the importance of independence, the importance citizens have for the whole notion of independence. Are the residents of Sedgwick independent kinds of people?
I think it's a combination of independent and interdependent.
Mm-hmm.
And we
depend on each other.
Depend on each other, yeah, largely by necessity.
Okay, folks, today we're talking with Bob St. Peter, a farmer and a survivor and an active citizen of Sedgwick, Maine, which has just passed its own local food and self-governance ordinance to stand up to the federal government and say, hey, we can take care of ourselves when it comes to food. So when we come back from this break, we're going to ask why they stood up against the federal government and passed a local food and self-governance ordinance. This is The Food Chain. Mike Lolson, right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here today. We're talking food sovereignty with the good folks of Sedgwick, Maine, a little coastal town on the coast of the great state of Maine, with Bob St. Peter. Bob had a conversation last evening with some very intelligent folks, one of which was a chief financial officer of a very important corporation who sells products all over the world. And I mentioned the fact that the good folks of Sedgwick, Maine, had passed a local food and self-governance act, and they said, why bother? What on earth is wrong with the federal government taking care of us? What is with you folks up there in Sedgwick that you would pass a local food and self-governance act? What's going on?
Well, the idea for creating this ordinance and talking to our town about this came out of a couple changes that were happening at the State Department of Agriculture around on-farm poultry processing, small-scale, and milk production, particularly raw milk production. And basically what has happened is that there's been a reinterpretation of who's a producer and who's a processor and what this means. And so the state is making an attempt at the moment to get us to scale up and to move into facilities that they're requiring us. For example, if we raise, process, and sell 1,000 birds or less, we have to have a facility to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, up until a couple of years ago, the understanding was that you could raise a few chickens in your backyard, if you like, and sell them to your friends and neighbors off the farm, and that was okay. And the state essentially rewrote the rules banning outdoor processing. And a number of us during this process said to the Department of Agriculture and to the Agriculture Committee that this is an entry point for a lot of us who are trying to establish farm businesses or trying to just recoup a little bit of our expenses. Our patrons are asking for farm-raised fresh poultry. If it's slaughtered outside, they're okay with that because they come to our farm and they trust our integrity and our skills.
You mean, just a sec.
Yeah.
I think I butchered 1 million chickens outside, and I don't think I butchered any chickens inside. They want
right.
you to take your chickens inside to butcher them? Why would they want that?
Well, that's a good question. That'd be a question for the State Department of Agriculture. I, the reason they gave us is because you can't be assured of the safety of the food unless you're doing it inside a facility that has washable walls. Which I work in one of these facilities. I work in a USDA inspected facility doing small scale numbers of poultry, and I think that if you have no walls, you have less chance for things to be remaining and overlooked and festering and that kind of thing. So they said you can kill them outside, but you have to process them inside. And a number of us complained, and it didn't go anywhere. And so the rules were changed, effectively banning outdoor poultry processing for sale. The state's also reinterpreting the regulations around raw milk sales. And again, it's been understood up until a couple of years ago that if you're milking cows and selling the milk directly to your patrons from your farm, then that's not the jurisdiction of the state. You don't need to be licensed. But now they're saying anybody who milks a cow is now a milk processor, milk distributor, and that requires a milking concrete slab milking room. If you're bottling, you're going to need a bottling room. If you're making cheese, you're going to need a cheese room. So in our community here, we're very small scale, diversified farm. And the people I buy milk from five cows. And occasionally I'll go over there Tuesday afternoon and I'll hang out and we'll talk while the milking is going on, and sometimes I'll even get to milk. You know, so it's not the kind of scale where these facilities make sense financially. They don't necessarily fit in the scale of our small diversified farms. And our patrons are some of the most informed people we know as far as food goes, and that's why they're coming down our driveways and wanting to buy our food, because they are informed and they're looking for a better choice.
So what about the people who would say, Bob St. Peter, that sounds all fine and dandy, but your food's making everybody sick?
Well, that's not the case, and this is where I think the onus falls to the USDA and the FDA and even our state departments of agriculture and state CDCs to show that is the case, that there has been throughout history a prevalence of small farm communities feeding each other and having massive outbreaks or massive recalls, or the history isn't there. But when you look at the industrial food system, history is there. So I'm not willing to be a scapegoat for a system that seems to be breaking down and making people sick. You know, people are coming to do what we're doing because it's an alternative, and it's time tested, and it's shown itself time and again to be safe and good for our communities in all kinds of ways.
So you're saying that the problem is not from the small farms?
The problem, in my experience, my family and a lot of families I know around here eat a large percentage of the food from small farms, and we're all thriving. We're doing just fine. You know, so even the state CDC, when the issue came up around poultry, admitted to one of our local farmers that if there is a foodborne illness outbreak in Maine, it's because it's imported. It doesn't happen here.
And yet the state government is coming down on you with these rules and regulations, even though you're not do not seem to be the problem. Why is that? What's going on?
I don't know. It could just be a bureaucratic mindset that there's the need to control and to regulate. There's issue of revenue at stake. You know, if my kitchen isn't licensed, or if I don't have a retail vendor's license, then that's money that's not going to the state. Federally, I don't know. I mean, I think part of it is the ability of people to feed themselves allows for other things to coalesce around it, like local ordinances that say that bad government policy and big corporations have been destroying our rural communities and our food systems for long enough that we're not going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look through history, and there's a letter, I believe, that Thomas Jefferson sent to George Washington when they were discussing when the Constitution was being drafted, and it was about the importance of having a minimum number of yeoman farmers in this country. And Thomas Jefferson said 25% as a number of yeoman farmers who are landed, who can feed themselves and feed their communities, and that is what would protect against tyranny.
Because
and now we're what's that?
Because they're independent, right?
They're independent, right? And if we can take this even a little more broadly, anytime an impoverished nation goes to the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund for loans, there come conditions and requirements, and primarily it's a deconstruction of the ability of people to feed themselves. And so you have.
Wait a minute here. Are you telling us that because we're relying on the world banks to fund our debt, that those bankers are coming back to us and saying, "We'll give you the money, but first you must take away the sovereignty of your own people to feed themselves"? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's in this country, it's already happened. Like our economy around food has already been restructured, and that's why in a rural community like mine, I can drive pretty much 5 miles in any direction and get food from all over the world, probably from the guy's company who you were having a conversation with last night. But getting local food around here this time of year is very difficult because it's not available, because we've had our
We're going to have to take a quick break, Bob. Back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Do stay tuned. This is getting weird. Well, here's an interesting observation from Bob St. Peter up there in Sedgwick, Maine, tiny little coastal village in Maine there. He says that you can go anywhere around Sedgwick for miles and find food from China or some giant corporation in brightly packaged form. But, you know, if you look around for local food, it's almost impossible to find. Now, why is that? Is it just some kind of natural phenomenon that took over, that all of a sudden we could only produce food from some kind of giant corporation? What happened to us, you and I? Have we lost the ability to grow our own food? Well, that seems to be the case. And so what happened in Sedgwick, Maine, is the people stood up and said, let's vote in a local food and self-governance ordinance that gives us food sovereignty, that we'll be in charge of our own food. And so the town hall meeting picked it up, and everybody gets to vote in Sedgwick, Maine. It's one of those real democracies. And so 120 people raised their hand and said, yes, we want this ordinance. And none said nay. So why did everybody vote yes for local food and self-governance, Bob St. Peter?
Well, before I answer that, I do want to say that two neighboring towns, Penobscot, passed this ordinance also unanimously.
So the rebellion is spreading. So we're going to pick that up down the line here. But
yeah.
Why?
Okay. So there's other towns that have done this and are doing this.
Okay. Good. But why 100%? I mean, it's hard to get everybody to agree on anything. I mean, you could come and give away money and somebody would object, but why did...
if it gives you any indication, there were two questions asked, at our town meeting. One was whether the town would be liable. The answer is no, the town's not liable. And the other was, will this protect our bake sale and our church suppers? And the answer to that is yes, because it's not just a small farm that's experiencing these regulations that are squeezing us out, but church suppers, potlucks, bake sales, all these traditions we have of sharing food are being outed and being told you've got to cook that or prepare all that in a licensed kitchen, a commercial kitchen.
Are you saying that this federal and state governments are going after church potlucks?
I think my neighbor has compiled a stack of incidences where Boy Scouts or Little Girls in Lemonade Stands have been told that you can't do that. You need a license or you need a certified kitchen. This stuff is all over the web, and I think it's a little bit of searching and it comes up with some pretty bizarre stories. So there's a trend towards, you know, food being sterilized and wrapped in plastic, and that's the only way we're going to get our food. And that benefits the people who make the money off that food.
And thus the bankers that you were talking about that control our debt.
It's the bankers, it's the transnational corporations, the food companies, and it's the elected officials who get very large campaign contributions from agribusiness lobbyists. So there's a lot of money to be made off food, and that's kind of the point of our ordinance, is that people are making a lot of money off of food, but it's not staying here in our community. So what can we do about it? So part of this, I can't speak for everybody in my town, but I think part of it is the recognition that we do have a tradition of a type of agriculture, a scale of agriculture that these regulations don't necessarily fit, particularly when we're doing face-to-face sales. And that's what this ordinance only exempts people who are selling direct to the people who are going to eat it in their home. So that type of relationship, people understand, has existed here for a very long time. And for those of us who are beginning farmers and food producers, and we had to educate our town about this. We had to let people know that this is what's happening, and that not everybody is choosing to go to the city and find a job. And if there are people who want to live out here and growing food and doing this is one of the ways that we're going to do it. But people also recognize the importance of church suppers, grange suppers, potlucks, all these, you know, protecting food as a social, you know, as a social event from these also unnecessary and unhelpful regulations. So there's a number of reasons, but I think what it comes down to is that as rural people, we're feeling pinched and squeezed, and we need to figure out what's going to work for us here, and this is part of it.
And 100% of the people... I mean, 120 out of 120. I don't know if I've ever heard of a vote in which there was that kind of unanimity. What are they voting for? What is it exactly? Are they voting for, like, food, or is it their right to live?
I think it's more the right to live, because I think if you said Food Safety and Modernization Act to most people in Sedgwick, Maine, they're not going to know what you're talking about. So our farm community and our local food community is almost a subset of the larger community. I mean, people still get most of their food at the grocery store.
Sure.
But people understood that it is about how we're going to live here. You know, it's us getting the ability to choose how we live, how we make a living.
And something must have resonated, because two neighboring communities have adopted. Did they adopt your ordinance, or did they do their own ordinance?
No, this was the same ordinance. The ordinance came out of a number of us here in this. We live on a peninsula, and so we're several towns, but it's not a very large landmass, and so we're all very close to each other. And this came out of a number of us in different towns facing these same issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was drafted and it was introduced in a number of towns by the residents who live there, who were directly impacted. So it passed in our town. It passed in Penobscot unanimously.
Unanimously as well.
Yes. Yeah. Same. Unanimously. All hands went up. And in Blue Hill, which is kind of our little regional hub, I guess, and it passed there with a handful of objections, but pretty near unanimously. And it did fail in one town.
Oh, it did?
The one town where it went to the ballot, where people voted in a voting booth, it failed there. But it's currently, there's a petition being circulated to re-vote on that because the town's ordinance review committee wrote their recommendation for a no vote on the ballot.
Oh, vote no on this. That's good.
Pretty much. So it failed, and there's a petition that's being circulated, and they'll probably vote on it again in the next few months.
Well, you know, when I put out a press release on the show, on the subject of the show, I got emails from all over the place, including Canada. There's a community in Canada that is voting on the same kind of local food and self-governance ordinance. And so it seems to be something that is ringing bells across the land. Should we allow for our own control of our food? Should we pass a law or an ordinance that says we are sovereign when it comes to what we may feed each other? If I'm going to trade a bucket of milk for my whole milk for my cow for a couple of your chickens, should we be able to do that? Or should we ask the government for forgiveness and for permission? Right back. This is The Food Chain. Well, folks, we've had a bad luck with some of our industrial foods through the past few years. We've had some bad luck with all kinds of things: baby food, eggs, hamburger, peanuts, pet foods, spinach, who knows what else. Contaminations have sickened people throughout the land. And so we've instituting rules and regulations from the federal government and state governments that are getting control of this situation so we can have safe food. But the question is, should the rules and regulations that govern a food factory in China apply to Bob St. Peter's one-acre farm in Sedgwick, Maine? Government seems to think so, and so is coming down on all these small farmers who are producing our food on their farms. Should that be the case? Should the rules that apply for one apply to all, or should there be a difference? What do you think? We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. Michael here with Bob St. Peter. Bob, is your food sickened to anybody up there? I mean, can you ever recall anybody, you know, coming down with mass cases of sickness from eating local food?
No. But I can tell you that I was part of a food recall, and I can tell you how real quickly how it went down.
How?
A small number of us purchased half a pig or whole pig from a local farm, and we picked up our pig that night. We got a call, and it was the farm, and they said somebody opened a ham steak and it smelled a little funny. We checked with the butcher, and they confirmed that they're having a little trouble with their curing process, and so get rid of all the ham and we'll replace it. So nobody ate it. I hadn't even opened it, and the reason why we found out is because somebody knew what food was supposed to look like and smell like, and this was not it. And within a matter of four or five phone calls, problem solved.
Problem solved.
Non-issue. And we probably wouldn't have gotten sick. Might have gotten a bellyache, but it probably wasn't something so severe that, like the poor woman who ate the Toll House cookie dough and ended up in a coma and had multiple organ failure. Not worried about that.
Yeah, and it kind of takes care of itself pretty quickly, too, because if, you know, one of us sells something to a neighbor and the neighbor gets sick, then who's going to find out about it really quickly, right?
Exactly, and that's the part of the ordinance, I think, that it doesn't say explicitly, but it doesn't really need to, that Our integrity as producers is what is going to keep our community safe and well. And if we're producing bad products, people are going to know. People are going to know immediately. And if there's a kind of self-regulation that goes on as a result of it.
Okay, let's go to the phones, folks. The phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And we have Millie. Millie, welcome to The Food Chain.
Good morning. This is a splendid show. Congratulations, and a splendid guest. It may interest a little your guest to know that I'm 86 years old, and my ancestors, my great-grandparents, came from Portland, Maine. He was a physician, and his wife had asthma, and they had heard that the San Francisco Bay Area would be good for them. So they went on the Transcontinental Railway in 1872.
And thus, Millie ends up in the world a Californian, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Millie, let me ask you something. Do you think that the rules that apply to a food factory in China should apply to the one-acre farm of Bob St. Peter in Sedgwick, Maine?
No, I do not. I think this is a terrible menace that's quickly developing here. I wanted to give out a website that I think he probably are. I may have got it from your show a few years ago. It's called Seed Savers Exchange.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
.com. I have given that out to friends in both Maine and Vermont. And then there's another one, Seed Savers. Here's the second one, heritageseeds.org.
And keep saving seeds, whatever you do, right, Millie?
Oh, yes. And people, I think I'll call in next week if it's relevant for certain organic food companies are selling organic seed bundles. And I think this is very important because I think we're going to go into a high inflation this country.
Good point. Thank you very much for the call, Millie. Really appreciate it. What about the food inflation that we're going through and people who live in rural areas on very low incomes? Bob, how's that going to work to be able to buy food from those big corporations in brightly packaged plastic bags that are going to cost a whole lot of money?
Yeah, well, in this country, there's 75% of the USDA's budget is for food stamps. So we have a safety net in this country, unlike other parts of the country. I don't know if inflation goes sky high and those programs get cut. I don't know what we're going to do at that point. But there's a lot of people around the world who have no safety net. And so when the food prices go up, they can't buy basic food, basic essentials.
It's got to get weird. Gene, welcome to the Food Chain. You're talking with Michael Olson, Bob St. Peter, Sedgwick, Maine. Go ahead.
Hi. This resonates so much with me. I admit I buy food at Costco, and nobody is there to do recalls. I've bought the 5-pack of avocados, and they're rotten by the time I get them home. You slice them open, and they're stringy and dark and rotten inside. I've purchased all kinds of products at Costco that are rotten. Where's the food recall on those? I'm just so much for this local food. I can't tell you. Go, guys.
Thank you very
make
much.
Make it big. Make it happen everywhere.
Make it happen everywhere. Hey, what about that, Bob? Can we make it happen everywhere?
This is a grassroots thing we're doing here, and if it fits in people's communities, then they should look at it. I've gotten calls and emails from people around the country, and so have other local residents here who've been working on this, and it's resonating with people. People get it immediately that that makes sense. It's scale appropriate. We have long traditions of doing it.
What's wrong with that? Ben, can you hold on? We'll pick you up when we get back from this break.
Sure.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Bob St. Peter. We're talking about local food and the local food ordinance passed by the good folks of Sedgwick, Maine, who looked at themselves at being possibly in the crosshairs of a new prohibition against local food, and they stood up and said, by golly, we want to be sovereign, food sovereign. And so we passed this ordinance that said, lay off, we can take care of ourselves. Do you think we can take care of ourselves, or do we need the federal government to guarantee our food safety? 800-624-2665, 831-4710-1080, right back. Well, who, folks, do you think should control what we eat? The good folks of Sedgwick, Maine, took a vote, and 100% of them, all 120, said we should control what we eat. But what do you think? Ben, what do you think? Who should control what we eat? Are you there, Ben?
Yes, this is the great Ben. Somebody once said that beware of the military-industrial complex. Now, should we not be equally as aware of the food-industrial complex? And isn't regulating the safety and quality of our food what the FDA gets their paychecks for? And how much concern should we have over the amount of radiation that's going to wind up in the food chain a relative to what's going on in Japan right now, the multiple nuclear things. So I'll take my answer off the air, but thank you for a wonderful program.
Thank you for the call, Ben. Yeah, beware the beware the military industrial complex, and I guess there is such a thing as a food industrial complex as well. Bob, what do you think? Do they have any control over what we eat?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I alluded a little bit to this earlier, but there are international agencies, development agencies that are shaping food systems around the world, and international bankers are involved. These transnational corporations are involved, and everywhere you look, and I travel around the U.S. and I do some travel internationally, and I see these patterns all over the world where people's ability to produce food in the rural community is no longer there. And you know, we could probably spend a whole hour on discussing why, but the pattern exists around the world. It exists in my community. It's in rural Iowa. It's in rural Mexico. It's in Mississippi. It's everywhere I've been. And it's you can tell, it's local food and local food traditions have been replaced by food from a very small number of corporations.
I just had I'm in communication with a professor of food history in Iowa, northern Iowa, the heart of the heartland, and she complains to me that she can't find local food in the heart of America's great heartland. Where local food used to be in great abundance, and it's now no longer there at all.
I visited Des Moines and went outside the city into Greene County, Iowa, which is really the epicenter of corn and soybean production, and the whole county has one grocery store, and there's just corn and soybeans as far as the eye can see. People aren't producing food.
They're producing something else.
Bob
St. Peter, thank you so much for joining us from Saving Seeds Farm at Sedgwick, Maine. And folks, what do you think? Who do you think should control what we eat? I never thought I'd be asking that question, but there it is on the table today, and you can answer it on the forums at metrofarm.com. Bob St. Peter, thank you so much, and stay cool up there in Maine.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.